background hiss, like we need Dolby fucking sound improvement. You should have recorded it in Dublin. At a Stonehenge monument on stage that was in danger of being crushed by a DeWolf. Happy 40th birthday, Spinal Tap.
Jesus Christ. It's like, I listened to a couple of movie pods and they're like, it's the 30th anniversary of this movie. And I'm like, no, surely not.
No, they just, no, check your dates.
And then you think like, you know, when we were watching Die Hard and I was thinking the movies that would have been 30 years old then, and it's like, it just doesn't seem possible.
We wouldn't have seen those movies because they, I mean, maybe late night on the ABC or something, but a 1958 movie wasn't getting a lot of
that's
run.
Right. It was hard to see a 30-year-old movie, that's correct. I guess the movies that we watched that were old, in inverted commas, that were on all the time were the Bond movies.
Yeah, it was 60s stuff.
Mm.
It was late. It was mostly mid and late 60s stuff. Because, I mean, no one was queuing up to see a fucking black and white movie.
No, I can remember going to a lunch with Vanessa's uncle and him talking about Casablanca and just basically going, you need to go and watch this if you love movies. It's a great movie.
Oh, great. I didn't realize your uncle was fucking Bill Simmons or one of his punishing fucking movie podcasts.
And then he sort of rattled off a whole heap of movies that I had no idea what he was talking about, but have probably seen, not watched in full, but have absorbed enough sort of popular culture around those. And that's the other thing, right, is now you can just, like, get the edited highlights on YouTube.
Read the plot outline on Wikipedia and go, oh, okay.
Yeah, or watch the, you know, the bits that get ripped off by The Simpsons or Family Guy. You can watch those bits on YouTube and then watch the, you know, watch the rip-offs.
Yeah, I have to say, I've got a pretty good understanding of fucking Casablanca, having never watched it. It's interesting like that. Welcome back to our sports podcast. Hey, look at that! Well, Mr. Dynamic, you will be back again. Another back with DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense. Trying to tangle the rust, go with the big black boobies in the back of the bus to smack you up. And stealing your lunch, money to search. Money to feel just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say? You got strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
Welcome back to episode 399 of the Balls Podcast. I'm Doc, he's Bezo. We might do something special next week. You'll have to find out when you get there. But we talk about the NBA, and I did enjoy it. It was Mike Volkanov, who was guesting on one of the Athletic NBA podcasts, who said, you know, talking about the kind of the weirdness of this part of the season where you're getting close enough to the playoffs, but it's really easy to read too much into this part, like to the stuff that happens in the next 20 games as being indicative of the playoffs. You know, like the way that everyone thought, oh, shit, the Nuggets are playing really badly in this next little stretch of the season. And then they just flicked a switch and played brilliantly all the way through the playoffs. And he said, I call this the whose line is it anyway part of the season, because the games happen, but the points don't matter. And it is a bit like that. There's just like the Dubs will lose by 50 one day and then they'll win by 30 the next day. And the day after that, Steph will tweak an ankle, which, you know, it's not exactly unforeseeable, but then they go and lose to Chicago, and Chicago have won three in a row, and fucking Atlanta have won three in a row. There's just all kinds of
weird shit.
Stuff that you don't know whether you can trust as being predictive or fucking indicative or anything.
But I think it's also a key pointer to the quality of the league in that, once upon a time, the Spurs used to cruise through large chunks of the schedule because they could play one or two of their good players and they would just simply out-talent and outwork the other team. And I think the talent is so good now that even a Trae Young-less Atlanta team has two really good, talented players on it that if you go to sleep on them in a game, they'll win.
There's also more to play for in this part of the season compared with, you know, a lot of teams like an Atlanta team that are 20 games behind first in the East would normally be thinking, well, let's fucking pull the ripcord and see what kind of draft pick we can get. Whereas they are trying to rack wins because it might give them a better chance in the play-in. Chicago and Atlanta are still a fair way behind Indiana and Philadelphia in the 7-8 part of the play-in. But Philadelphia are playing pretty ordinarily in the absence of Joel Embiid. So they're not completely out of reach.
Yeah, like even look at today, the Knicks that have been absolutely trashed by injury beat a Magic team that had won like six of their last eight.
Yeah, that was a weird one because Orlando have been, like the Spurs teams as well, they've been beating the teams they have to beat, which is not something you could say for, say, Cleveland, who, you know, 5-5 in their last 10, and that includes wins against Boston, but also some horrific losses against teams they absolutely should have beaten. Sacramento are kind of the same over in the
over
in the West.
They absolutely pulled one out in what I was just absolutely thinking that I would steal a game in the wins pool league, you know, a Wembley-less Spurs, and they almost beat the Kings.
Yeah.
And then the Lakers without LeBron go and beat the Bucks, and the Bucks have looked heaps better lately.
But the Bucks were playing in LA, so.
Yeah, and LA nightlife and all that.
And particularly when your 1A is now freshly single. Incredibly bored and horny at home. So, I think he probably went out and had a good time. Although he wasn't terrible. It was just an out of their skin performance from a lot of the other Lakers players. But yeah, that's a game that I was going to say that's a game that Milwaukee you regret, and I'm like, well, probably not, because it doesn't feel like it's really that much of a big deal for Milwaukee, because they're probably going to be second.
Well,
or third.
The 2-3 seems a little bit more set now, doesn't it? It's four games between third and sort of fourth.
And basically, Milwaukee and Cleveland just have to pace to each other because they're not going to get overtaken from behind, and they're certainly not going to catch up to Boston. So
no one's catching Boston.
And the only teams that are really surging in the East are teams like Miami, although they've lost their last two after stringing a whole lot of wins together. Miami are still a genuine contender to get into the four or the five, which means that they would end up playing Boston in the second round, which I'm sure is making a whole lot of LA-based fucking Green Machine fans a little bit nervous. Your Mike Scherz and company.
Oh, just everybody. And like, what we prefaced all that about saying these games at this time of year don't seem to matter, and yet those two Celtics...
Not that they don't matter, that they're not... The points don't matter because the performances aren't predictable and the outcomes are not predictable and they're not representative of anything that's going to come in late April, May, and June. But it's the W's still get racked.
Yeah, I guess we've been saying for ages that this Celtics team is utterly dominant and yet just
so dominant that Kurt Goldsberry had to redraw the axes of his fucking his efficiency landscape to have a longer y-axis for offensive efficiency, because the Celtics, with all their 150-point a game, you know, scoring things, are so far out, so much better than everybody else on offense. And yet, the two losses that they had this week kind of gave you an indication of how you beat the Celtics and what will bring them down. I mean, basically, you ride three variants. You get your big bloke to put his fucking shoulder through the chest of Porzingis. And you hope for a bit of ISO fever hitting the Mamba mentality boys, the Mambalites. End of shot clock hand grenades get thrown to Drew Holiday, because that's always a fun game. It used to be Marcus Smart who used to have to defuse them.
HP basketball sort of engaged with a whole heap of Celtics people, as he is wont to do.
He's an engagement whore. I haven't fucking followed him for years.
But he was sort of like they were saying, Tatum didn't play well and the threes didn't fall.
He didn't play well in the other game they played against Denver either. That's been the trend.
That is literally the knock on the Celtics, is that whatever you say about Denver, Murray could go missing, Gordon could go missing, KCP could go missing, Michael Porter Jr. could go missing, but there's that one guy that if you are within 4 points coming into the last 3 or 4 minutes, you've got a pretty good chance of winning, because that guy can just get you what you need.
Yeah,
and you can't say the same about Tatum.
It will just muscle you over the line, basically. Particularly when he's sort of laboring into the paint and then flinging up these essentially alley-oops for Aaron Gordon to throw down.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't know if you saw that supercut kicking around of Jokic's alley-oops to Gordon, but they're all in exactly the same spot. Gordon literally does not have to do anything but jump and put his hands out. Like, I reckon he could, you know, the old one of Jordan doing the free throws blindfolded because, you know, he'd done it that many times and he just had the muscle memory. I reckon Gordon could dunk alley-oops off Jokic blindfolded because he just, as long as he left the floor on the right spot, his hands are always in the same position and the ball's always there. It's just, it must be so nice. It just must be nice.
It's just nice seeing Boston lose. I mean, that's the important thing. Particularly Porzingis. I mean, I'd been reminded in a recent podcast that Porzingis has a bit of that fucking Cougar line about him, and it's never been resolved. So fuck that guy. Yeah. From when he was in New York. I don't think that's ever been sorted out. So yeah, I wish him all the fucking shoulders through the chest that he ends up getting across the rest of his career.
So are we going to see a bit of jockeying?
No, I really don't think so, because people don't. You can't rely on, unless it's absolutely guaranteed that you're going to, that such and such is going to be the sixth seed, for argument's sake. Then you might start to think about that. But
I was more thinking, are we going to see a bit of jockeying to play the Timberwolves in the first round?
But how do you know where the Timberwolves are going to end up? Because there's like, they could end up fourth. They could end up.
It's one game between first and third again.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Minnesota are much better set up to ride out, you know, a month without Cat, which is the positive side of what it's looking at, than they have been when they've lost him in the past. Because when he's gone down in the past, and I'm not saying he goes down a lot, but he's gone down in the past and they didn't have Naz Reid, or they didn't have Shlomo, or they didn't have various other bits and pieces. Naz Reid, they were unlucky to lose in overtime to Cleveland on a back-to-back today. And that was based on Naz Reid scoring fucking 40-odd points off the bench.
Yeah.
So it's they don't have a single person who can cover for what Cat does, but they have multiple people who can cover for bits of what Cat does. And they just have to stay. I mean, they won't drop any lower than fourth, probably, because that's 5.5 games down in New Orleans, who are a bit like the Magic, racking up wins against a softer part of the schedule. It's a bit hard to fucking know what to think about that. I haven't watched enough of them to think that I trust them, but a bit like the Magic, I don't trust them.
7-3 in their last 10. Yeah. Like it's not nothing, right?
Well, neither is the Magic's whatever they did. The Magic's are 8-2 in their last 10.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to be talking about them in conference finals? I certainly fucking don't.
No, but the Magic, I still believe that teams that have really good execution and really good solid players but lack that one guy that can do something in the moment, and Zion is that guy, and even B.I. is that guy. Remember that series they didn't have Zion against the Suns in the first round the year the Suns went to the finals, and they fucking gave it to the Suns. I have a lot more faith about those two guys stepping up in the finals than, you know, some of these other teams like the Kings or...
Well, the Kings are in the play-in, so they've got bigger problems. They might not even make it into the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, the Mavericks are another one that look red hot before the All-Star break and then have not looked that great since.
Well, Luka had got 5 consecutive 30-point or higher triple-doubles. Mm. And, like, most of those games they lost because defense is appalling.
That feels a little bit like a doctor the Bucks side, right? You just put it – like, if Bud was coaching that side, do you reckon they'd be 10 games better or 6 games better?
I don't think Bud is a particularly good coach, so you're probably asking the right person.
I think he's a great regular season coach. I think he's one of those coaches that can come in and just iron out the low-hanging fruit, right? Oh, well, we need to do this and this and this to maximize our team. It's when you have to make adjustments in the postseason. And this is the problem with, or the worry about Joe Mazzulla, right, is that he has good plans in the regular season to do some stuff, but what happens when your stuff is not working at all? Can you make any adjustments? Can you be flexible enough to admit that this is not the game, just to stick to your game plan, and that these players are good enough to do something different? Maybe we should try it.
But it's not even that he doesn't have the game plan. It's that the game plan gets ignored at the end of tight games by his two leading scorers, who just devolve into fucking Mamba mentality ISO bullshit. Yeah. And I guarantee that's not what he wants them to run, but it's what they're going to fucking run. They're fucking bounce the air out of the ball and then fucking throw up a horrible shot.
And Mario's made a really good point in... like in that game, the difference between – and the evolution of Michael Malone, in that they had 2 bad possessions in the first half – sorry, in the second half, cut the lead back to 5, and he straight away called timeout and reset. You know, hey, we said we'd do this and this and this. Let's – we didn't. We've gone back to doing bullshit. Let's get it right. Went back out immediately. You know, the lead went back out to 10. And that's what he doesn't seem to do. He's sort of like, oh, well, we've got this plan. Let's just let it roll. And it's like, well, sometimes you just have to, you know, gently pull the child to the side and remind them that, no, we don't scream in public.
Yes, but when you are, you're not an adult, you're just a fucking teenage babysitter. Because when he got the gig, you know, he will never have the authority to be able to rein in Tatum and Brown. He just never will. Because he was the fourth assistant on the bench and got elevated to being in charge. Well, of course your stars are in charge of that team.
Yeah. It'll be fascinating. If they do not make the finals this year, I think he's going to get he has to get bounced.
Of course he does. He absolutely will. But it's not because he's a bad coach. It's because of the position he came from.
Yeah, the situation. Yeah, that's right. I mean,
he could be a fantastic coach for a team that he can come in and install himself as an authority, but they're never going to see him as an authority.
I can't remember who might have been on the X-Ringer guys. Is it Kevin Clark on his NFL podcast? And he was talking about potential NFL head coaches, and he was saying this. There was a young guy, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a young guy. He got a head coaching job too soon, was terrible at it, like really, really sucked.
Yeah.
Went back and worked his way through being a coordinator and was essentially like...
That's a lot of them, to be honest.
But I can't remember, but he was basically seen as the best offensive coordinator kicking around now. And it's like, these guys don't stay static. And the situation really does matter. And if you're given too much power at the wrong time, no matter how good you are, it just might not matter. Because if everyone out there ignores your message, then it doesn't matter how good the message is, does it?
Or if you're just terrible at communicating, you walk in and you conduct yourself as though you fucking know everything, then particularly
and then
the NBA.
And then there's guys like Griffin that just seems like he was not ready for a head coaching job ever. Like, he just might not ever be a head coach because the basic stuff that he seemed to be completely missing that's coming out of Milwaukee, that everyone's going like, he never knew what Dame liked to do. Like, Dame's been in the league a long time. Even if you're an assistant coach and he was not on your team, you should probably know the key points of how Dame Lillard likes to play for when your team plays the Blazers. Like, the low-hanging fruit like that just seems insane that some coaches can miss, but...
Yeah, Adrian Griffin is a bit of a case study in how to mismanage the small things and not understand how that could impact the big things. Like, he clearly didn't put any fucking stock in the personal relationship stuff and all that sort of shit. And it didn't matter. But you go back to the idea that he'd interviewed for so many head coaching jobs and not got it.
It's clear
that he didn't see that there was a blind spot in however he was conducting himself that was always causing him to go for other things. Now, it would be very easy to tell yourself there's a color element to this and believe that and feel justified in that. But, I mean, the performance when he was elevated to head coach just kind of indicated that maybe it wasn't just that. Maybe that he just was better cut out to be somebody else's 2IC or 4IC.
Yes. Like, there's a coach that's been really successful in touch football, and it's a different sort of sport because if you're willing to give 60% or 80% of your life over to the sport because it's a volunteer sport, you're going to get, you know, a fair chunk of jobs just because someone has to give up their time to do it. But
best ability is what? Availability.
But I've always thought in a professional setup, this coach would be an amazing development coach a la Kenny Atkinson, right? As the person that you brought into a club system just to coach up the young people and give them the right skills. But the man management and the game plan stuff is so rigid and set in stone that every time they run up against a flexible tactical coach with the same amount of talent, the result is almost inevitable.
Brett Brown.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's just fascinating because, like, there's not the offensive defensive coordinator sort of slots for those people to go into in touch, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like if you put your hand up, you'll get a job, and that job might not necessarily be the job you're best suited for, but that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But it's fascinating that in a sport that's as professional as the NBA, they still get it wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
I guess is
And in the NFL, they get it wrong regularly. Because billionaire fuckwits are making the decisions in these things. So they're often enticed by someone who interviews well, who turns out to be a ludicrous egotist with Dunning-Kruger. And I can say that because that's exactly what happened to my team, the Raiders, on multiple occasions, particularly most recently with Josh McDaniels.
Well, it's like the story Kimber told me where he went and worked for the Caribbean Premier League and he'd do all this work about, you know, well, we've got this star and so we need to surround this star with this sort of complimentary batter and these sort of middle order players, you know, do all this work and lay it all out. And then the owner would go, yeah, but I want to have beers with Dave Warner. Yes. And you just throw it all out the window.
Of course you can, because if I've got $1 billion and I've got a fucking CPL franchise, I'm not doing it so that some nerd can get a fucking chubby over how good our stats are. I'm doing it because I want to have fun, motherfucker. This team invented to stroke my ego. I'm doing this instead of owning a racehorse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, which is interesting. How does that correlate to motorsport? Because motorsport,
plenty of cashed up fuckwits in motorsport.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
A lot of them work at Red Bull.
You're sinking your money into the car, though, right? Not the talent.
And the team. I mean, it depends because, I mean, you look at, say, I'm trying to think of a good equivalent accounts of like a single billionaire. I mean, obviously, Red Bull's a perfect example because Mateschitz, who was the kind of the de facto head of Red Bull. I mean, he was the operational head of Red Bull. Red Bull thing obviously has blown up massively in the last couple of weeks because of this power struggle after the death of Dietrich Mateschitz between the Thais, who technically own more of the company than the Austrians, but the Austrians always had operational control of it. And they are having this kind of turf war for this control of Red Bull, you know, Red Bull, the company, the fucking soft drink maker, not just Formula One team. And that's being played out with this. The Austrians are clearly trying to get rid of Christian Horner by leaking the details of his really fucking pathetic, no game whatsoever sexting into the media. The Thais have lined up behind Horner. It's really just, and Verstappen and his dad have lined up behind, behind the Austrians because that's where their alliance lies. So it's the same kind of thing where these people just built this fucking edifice to their own ego and then watching it blow up on them. And it's quite hilarious. It's much more entertaining than watching the fucking racing anyway.
Yeah, the funny thing is about Red Bull is it might be one of the biggest money supporters of sport in the world.
It's one of the greatest marketing organizations in the history of the world. Yeah. People know Red Bull before they even know what Red Bull sell or make.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Red Bull means more adventure sport, you know. Yeah. Sports out on the edge, you know, Point Break style, than a drink, for sure. Yeah. Like, Red Bull means to me, you know, bikes falling off mountains and guys riding over big jumps or surfing or Formula One, you know, like.
Dudes parachuting from the edge of the universe kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And, like, it's almost like if the drink.
Christian Horner sending really corny texts to some girl that his wife got him to get a job for.
And I guess the drink must sell a lot to fund it all. I don't really understand how it all works, but
unless it's a massive tax dodge or money laundering scheme, yes, I imagine it must. Yeah, the selling of cans of shit must be involved here, but it's not the. I mean, you tend to see people more with those nasty off-brand ones, like Monsters, probably because it gets distributed by
Coca-Cola.
There's
nothing more like I sort of tend to think into the future a little bit, and I just wonder when the energy drink smoking phase is going to come, when people like my wife are going to be doing studies on, you know, having 2 700 tins of Monster before you get any food into your belly. What does to your long-term health.
No, you have a pie with it before you start your shift on the construction site. Look, I think it's fucking known that you shouldn't do that. It's the vapes I'm more worried about because, you know, there's people turn out with, let's fucking inhale a whole lot of fucking bubbling surfactants into our lungs and see what the fuck happens. Yeah. Gee, I wonder if that's going to turn out to be a problem.
At least they're not able to sponsor sports at this stage. You want to bet? That's one good thing.
Go and have a look at the side of the McLaren Formula One car and the McLaren Indy cars. Yeah. Vapes are fine. You can sponsor. Vape companies have no issues.
It's almost. It's not like we've got an example of how this went last time, guys. Come on.
I know, but this is different. It's not as though it's exactly the same company.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
British American Tobacco, back they come. Anyway, there's There's a Christian single in your area, because pretty soon Ginger Spice is going to be fucking kicking him to the curb, I imagine.
Major, major sausage that is. Look at the state of it.
Should we talk about the Thunder just keeping on, keeping on? Just, you know.
If you want, they exist. Did they win today? Oh, they were playing somebody
today. They did. They beat the Heat today.
Yeah, no, that was the second game. That was a decent contest.
It was funny. I heard a whole heap of pundits sort of saying that, you know, Hayward would just sort of subsume Giddey, and that Giddey would be obsolete by the finals. And yet, like, Giddey is so obvious. His off-season is going to be fascinating from a basketball perspective.
Or probably also from a real estate perspective, finding out where he's going to live and finding out what schools his girlfriend is going to go to and all that sort of stuff. It's going to be really interesting.
Because if he sees himself as a superstar, right?
Which, with hair like that, you can't not. I mean,
but there's no way OKC are giving him the max.
There is no world in which he stays in OKC. None at all.
There is.
Because they're going to run out of money. They'll be able to afford him, and he's the first one out the door. Because why would you keep him? I mean, best will in the world. Ignoring his passport, you know, you wouldn't give a fuck if he wasn't Australian. Yeah, you know, he'll be the first out the door, and that's fine.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is he going to do – what was the guy that went from the Nuggets to the Pistons for a much bigger role?
Oh, it's Jeremy Grant, who's now
– Jeremy Grant is now not for a much bigger role? Yeah, because he
has a lot of dollar signs on the end of it, but I think they were actually going to pay him reasonably well, but he just wanted to get more of a highlight. And then he ended up getting traded to Portland.
Yeah, he wanted the ball more. He wanted to be the guy more. And it's interesting because Michael Porter Jr. was sort of tagged as the person that was going to be the next Jeremy Grant, right? He was going to be the guy that sort of went, oh, I want my own team. And yet he's turned into the real lunch pail, 8 rebounds, work hard on defense, shoot threes when I'm given the ball sort of guy.
Well, he definitely does have some lunch pail construction sort of attitudes to women, so that's great.
Yeah. Ill-advised opinions, shall we say?
Just the kind of dumb shit you say when you're 20, I suppose, but fucking hell. I suppose I should be glad that no one was sticking a microphone under my nose when I was young and dumb and full of stupid views. But
yeah, I don't know whether I would have had quite that bad of views, but anyway.
No, I mean, all these things, basically women's sport is shit because they're weak, essentially.
Yeah, there's a real feeling like, you know, I follow college sports almost negatively. Like, not negatively as in I dislike it, even though I sort of philosophically do dislike it.
I'm a little bit less anti it because these dudes are actually getting paid legitimately now in a way that they simply weren't a year and a half ago, to the point where Adam Silver is going to put a bullet in G League Ignite because it doesn't have a purpose anymore. Because nobody will want to go and play for that team because they can make more money in NIL and the track record of G League Ignite has not been to turn out great basketball players compared to college.
Well, that's the thing. If you want to be better prepared for the NBA, go to the NBL. Seriously.
Or go to college because at least you'll play with decent talent and in a team environment and you'll get paid.
Yeah, that's right. If you want to get paid and stay in America and be sort of that, then go to college. And if you want to go and play against big boys and get ready for the big boys thing, go to the French League or the Australian League or one of the other European.
I wouldn't say the French League because its track record is one. Well, one and a half if you count Bilal Coulibaly. He plays for the Wizards, so he's only half a player.
Yeah, but there's another kid this year that's going to be a top five pick.
That doesn't. We're not counting what's going to happen this year because we don't know how that kid's going to turn out next year.
That's true.
And this year, one of the number one prospects is in the Australian League. So
that's what I mean. The Australian League has a much better track record of preparing professionals. Yeah. Maybe not number one draft picks, but if you want to be a well prepared professional for, for the league. Hey, just on a side note, Patty Mills, 16 minutes, 13 points.
Born to play for the Heat.
That's right. It's like Spurs East. Thank you very much.
And Adam was trying to ship him off to the Spurs, and I've never agreed with that. I certainly didn't make any comments to suggest that the Spurs is where he should have been.
Well, he would have had to accepted that he was in the Udonis Haslam part of his career. Yeah, he'd gone back to the Spurs.
Yeah. And I think he can go to Miami and be actual spare Udonis Haslam now that Udonis Haslam's moved upstairs.
Well, like 13 points in 16 minutes is exactly what you want from Patty Mills. Yep. Probably even 10 points in 12 minutes would be awesome. They would love that.
It's a hell of a lot more than they ever got out of fucking Kyle Lowry towards the end. So
that's right. And
that's the role he's playing.
And Patty's a competent point guard. Like, he can run some stuff with Bam or Duncan Robinson or, you know, what's the other kid's name? James Jacquez Jr.
Yeah. Like, Jaime Jacquez.
Jacquez?
One week.
Yeah, I just love that. I think that's going to be awesome. And, like, he'll bury 3 3-pointers in a game against the Celtics in the second round to knock them out.
Well, then he assumes the Celtics make the second round after they get beaten.
By Atlanta.
Well, I think it'll be Chicago who end up in the eight. Just because they're... If they can keep racking dubs the way that they're racking dubs, I think they'll be the eight seed. It's weird how Halliburton got that hamstring twinge, and he hasn't really been the same since. And Indiana have gone as he went, essentially. They've been middling.
I still feel like they're a year, or it's just something, I don't know.
Curse of the midseason tournament.
Yeah, sure. And that might be just... It's really hard for young players and young teams to be up for so long, which is what's making this Thunder thing so impressive, right? We keep sort of waiting for their young guys to hit the wall, and maybe they will. Maybe they'll flame out in the first round because the West is that sort of deep.
Yeah, Chet's been up and down. I mean, it's been mostly about the fact that Shea is, as the kids say, him.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a genuine MVP prospect by the numbers.
The only problem is that he's not
Jokic, who's better.
Yeah, but he's Jokic-like in that he is very consistent, right? Like, you don't get many Tatum 10-point games from Shea, and then the rest of them just sort of bob up and down. You know, you have a Chet night, you have a J-Will night,
yep.
You know, even you have a random Giddy night, and Shea's just 32 points and 6 assists every single night.
You're not having too many Gordon Hayward nights.
No.
Those would be pretty grim nights. That'd be kind of Christian youth group nights.
So what's happened in the test series in New Zealand, mate? Did they go and pour a whole heap of bitumen onto the pitch overnight? What's going on?
I haven't been watching. Because that fucking, all you need to do is put fucking Scott Kugelhorn's name on a team list, and my interest fucking falls off a cliff. I hope New Zealand get beaten by a fucking innings, which they can't do because they're batting in their second innings. I think they're 2 down and they've got a lead of about 40 on. So they're competing, but fucking, I don't care, man. I really don't. And I hate the fact that, because this would be one of the most looked forward to test series imaginable, but. Why do you got to pick that fucking cunt? I don't get it. I just don't fucking get it.
And he's not very good.
He's not very good. And there's no form to suggest that he should be there. And he hasn't played very well.
I could understand the politics if he was, you know, Dennis Lilly and Richard Hadley combined reborn. But he's an average medium pacer. What the fuck?
He was picked for his speed and he's slower. He's one of the slowest bowlers on either side. Fucking Nathan Lyon's probably quicker. Anyway. So it's taken. robbed all the joy from that series.
So ends our test series recap.
Pretty much. The Kama Tour continues. We've got a coaching corner stuff. It's the final ever Pep Guardiola versus Jurgen Klopp regular season meetup in the Premier League. Unless, of course, Klopp comes back one day. And that's interesting because those two have completely designed the story of the last 10 years of football have been Pep and Klopp, not just them as personalities, but in terms of the way that they play football over the last, probably longer than that, probably just from the 2010s right through the 2024, probably the two most influential coaches in world football. And it'll also probably decide who wins the Premier League. So that should be an interesting game. The thing with games that get built up, you say, well, that'll end nil all, but only one Pep Klopp Premier League game has ever finished nil all. They always have goals in them.
So what's Klopp going to do? Like, is he just burnt out and needs a couple of years off?
Yeah, he's burnt out. He says he needs a year off. He's cooked. He said, I just don't have the energy for this. I think he might be a prospect of the Germany job.
Right.
Germany are hosting the Euros. And if they don't go that well, they've got Nagelsmann, who was a young wunderkind who got the Bayern job but kind of flamed out at it. So a little bit like your man, like some of those NFL coaches you were talking about. Although he'd been quite successful at Hoffenheim and Leipzig, I think, before then. But it's so there might be an opportunity there. in a bit, but I think it becomes a bit difficult to work out who he'd go and coach for, because he's not going to coach in the Bundesliga again unless it's Dortmund, because he certainly doesn't like Bayern. And Bayern would be the only team that would be a high enough level for him to go to. He's not going to coach again in the Premier League against anybody else. He could probably go to La Liga and coach Barcelona or Real Madrid, but those are not fun jobs.
No.
So I think he might think when he finished his Dortmund job, they had a big slump. They had a really rough year with finishing against XG. They massively underperformed their XG, and they finished nowhere. And you know, essentially he was sacked at the end. But he said, "Look, I'm going to take a year off." In the end, he only took like 4 months off before he got the Liverpool job, and he's been there ever since. But yeah, I reckon he probably will take a good amount of time off.
So one of the things I was wondering about, so America and the Saudis, right, are the two leagues that are trying to get up to like being the, you know, second or third league in the world. Would you agree?
I don't think so. The Saudis just want to get into the conversation with Europe. And the MLS it's not about parity with Europe. It's about getting parity with the NHL and the NBA and the non-football sporting codes. So that's who the MLS's rivals are. I suppose to a certain extent it's Liga MX, the Mexican league, but they are actually collaborating with them. They've started a cup competition, which is just between Mexican and American teams. So they're kind of joining forces, essentially. They're doing more to kind of leverage that, because, you know, the most popular football team in America is the Mexican national team because of the nature of population flows and migration. So MLS are trying to harness that after years of trying to kick against it.
Yeah, I just wondered whether, like, is the next move to try and hire some of those superstar coaches? So it's like, well,
I don't feel like they bring the, compared to a Messi or a Ronaldo or even, you know, some of those middling European stars, I think people always turn up to watch people play football, not to watch people.
No, they don't watch them to coach. But
apart from you would turn up to watch coaching because you're weird. But most people would rather turn up and watch Messi play than watch Pep coach.
But if you had Pep and Klopp coaching two MLS sides, which is sort of like a nice retirement gig for them, right? Because it's not the same sort of level of pressure. And doesn't that give your league like another 2 or 3% legitimacy?
I think it might give heaps of credibility, but it's not going to make the games any better.
No, probably not.
Yeah, I don't think. The other thing is that I suppose that's outside the salary cap. So
yeah, that's what I mean. Like it's more starry names you can add to the sheet without having to like rejigger the whole league. You know, you're not going to get the top stars in Europe, but you could probably get the top coaches.
Well, Messi's coach at Inter Miami. Well, the previous coach in Miami was Phil Neville, the former, you know, Manchester United player. And the coach at the moment is Tata Martino, who was a former Barcelona or Real Madrid coach. I think he's also one of the former coach of the Argentinian national team. So they do have fairly high caliber coaches. It's just that they don't, you know, Pep and Klopp will be incredibly difficult. I suppose there's a world in which Pep is a big fan of New York. I mean, in his sabbatical year, because he took a year off after Bayern before he joined Man City, he actually spent the year in he spent a full year in New York, you know, playing chess in the park and coaching kids games and just absolutely disconnecting from football. But the Citigroup own a team in New York. So maybe that's kind of the parachute out of City when it eventually happens, is that he retires to New York and he coaches NYCFC.
Yeah, and it's sort of like he's almost like the NBA being moved out of the coaching job into the front office. Yes, we've found a position for you in the front office where we can pay you the rest of the contract.
Yes, the Mitch Kupchak, Brad Stevens kind of, yes.
Well, you could argue that Brad Stevens is actually doing a pretty good job as an executive, like, though next year might be interesting.
I was trying to think of a deal that they've done to bring someone in. I suppose Porzingis.
KP.
That brings us back to our not celebrating people who remind us of Scott Kukulon.
And getting rid of Marcus Smart and bringing in Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday will be just as useless as Marcus Smart when he gets those grenades handed to him at the end of the shot clock.
Yeah. All right, shall we come back and talk some tunes?
Let's do that. This was Bulls Podcast 399, Collector's Item Special.
399.
I was Doc, he was Bezo, and we'll talk to you next week, unless Helmut Marko has a dossier of creepy texts we've sent.
That's quite possible. That could get us cancelled if anyone cared enough to cancel us.
Look, we're too old to have sent sex to anybody. Let's be honest. That sort of stuff is that's the kids do that. I've never sent anybody a picture of anything connected to me. It's very unlikely to, because I'm old. This is where Bezo admits that all he ever does is just send filth on the internet.
That's me.
To his missus.
Just search for me on something ending in DR and you'll find me there.
What? Dominican Republic?
See you, Doc. Still doesn't know. It's the last of that whiskey, so.
So you better make up that fucking seven wins on Adam.
Yeah.